Before we dive in today, I want to let you know a few ways you can support the podcast. The biggest one by far is word of mouth. If you enjoy this and you know other Stephen King fans, please tell them about it. Share the episodes on social media. It really does help. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Chat Cemetery. There are links to those in the show notes. And if you are really dedicated to the show, you can become a Patreon supporter where I will have bonus episodes going up. I am covering all of the Stephen King related comics over on Patreon. So there's definitely going to be a lot more bonus content coming this year. And now let's get into the episode. Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am once again joined by Becky Kovach to discuss The Wind Through the Keyhole, which is the final Dark Tower book, but it takes place between the fourth and fifth books. Becky, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, it was really nice to have two short Stephen King books back to back, and by short, I mean they were normal length.
What was the book before this one that you read?
Before this one, I had read 11/22/63, which was not the short one. The short one came after, and it was Joyland.
Okay. This one, especially by like the Dark Tower series, as far as that goes, like this one is so much shorter than most of the other books, which is just kind of like a nice little breather.
Yeah, I opened it and I was like, oh, the words aren't all crammed together, because it wasn't like this mass market paperback, which when I read The Gunslinger, it looked short, but the words were so crammed onto the page that it wasn't as short as I thought it was. But this one was a nice, you know, 309 pages for the copy I had.
Yeah, I think mine was about 307. And my copy of The Gunslinger was like 150, but like you said, the words are just crammed onto the page. So it ends up being so much denser than you realize just by looking at it. And then the books just get so long after that, that reading Wind Through the Keyhole in comparison was just like such a breeze.
Yeah. So my question for you then, because I know you didn't join me for the episode on book seven, have you read all of them now, or are you still making your way through that last book?
I still have to make my way through that last book. I haven't even started, to be honest.
Okay.
Just because I wanted to make sure that I had Wind Through the Keyhole done in time for us to talk about it.
I appreciate that. The good thing is that, like I said, it's between books four and five, so it doesn't really take anything away from you waiting and then diving into book seven.
Right. And when it was released, and there's like a little forward at the beginning, and he kind of talks about how he thought that he was done with this series and these characters, but then he realized he had a couple more stories left to tell. And it kind of does work as its own standalone novel as well. Like, if you haven't read the rest of the series, you can still read Wind Through the Keyhole.
Yeah, because this takes you back in time, as many of Roland's stories do, and you really get to see more of his old friend Jamie. You have this whole thing going on, and you know, it's one of those things where you don't need this necessarily, but it's just a nice little addition.
Yeah, I can see why he didn't include these particular stories in like the series itself, but it is nice to have them. Not only does this one take you back in time, it also takes you into a story that he told within the story that he's telling.
Yeah.
So it's like a story within a story within a story.
It really is just kind of crazy how I don't even know what the right word is. It's kind of like when you watch Inception.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because he's like the frame of the story is him and Eddie and Susanna and Jake are hunkering down for a storm. And as they're kind of curled up around a fire that they've built, he starts telling them a story of like when he was younger. And then like in this particular instance, he like was telling a story to a kid. So he like explains the story that he was telling to the kid within the story that he's telling to Eddie and Jake and Susanna.
Yeah. And you have two different aliases for Randall Flagg in this. We have Martin Broadcloak, which we've heard before. And then when he's telling the story within a story, which is The Wind Through the Keyhole, you have this boy named Tim Ross who lives with his mother. And then a man named the Covenant Man comes by. And immediately you're like, oh, this is another name for Randall Flagg.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty clear from the get-go that that's who we're dealing with.
What did you think of that moment where they tell you or imply that Tim's father was killed by a dragon while in the woods?
I guess when I first read it, I was like, oh, like, this is like a fantasy story that you tell a child.
Yeah.
And as it goes on and you realize, like, oh, this is another, like, name for Randall Flagg, like, you see that he's kind of a key player in it. It kind of got me thinking that maybe it wasn't just, like, a story that you tell a kid, that it there was some, like, grain of truth to it.
And you have a magical element to this story as well when you have the tiger being Merlin, I believe.
Yes. The thing about these books, though, is, like, there always is some, like, small element of, like, magic to everything that's going on.
Right.
So that's why, like, this story that he's telling that is called The Wind Through the Keyhole, even though he says that his mother used to tell it to him when he was a kid, like, it seems like it could have been something that maybe once upon a time did happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes I feel like King can get a little too meta with things, and I wasn't immediately convinced with this book that I was going to care for it quite as much as I did for the other books in the series, just because at times it felt like this was something that was possibly cut from Wizard and Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of just held on to it and then used it as, you know, bonus material, so to speak, almost. And I think knowing that it takes place between the fourth and fifth books, you really get this idea that there's so much that he could have told us that he chose not to, because he said he thought he was done with this. But this whole story within a story, while it doesn't impact the greater plot of the Dark Tower series, you know that Roland loves telling stories. And I think there are a lot more stories in his repertoire that he has not told. So it's interesting when you get things like this, because then you're like, okay, is King just going to keep revisiting this because we know Roland loves to tell stories?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I don't know what, like, the time frame is, like, how long after the series ended this came out, but he does straight up say, I thought I was done, and then I realized that there was more to tell. And it stands to reason that with Roland having lived as long as he did, because the way that they kind of explain him is that time is falling apart, so he has lived across essentially centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So it stands to reason that there's got to be more stories that Roland could tell. It's just a matter of whether or not King wants to tell them, I guess.
Yeah, and the publication date on this was 2012, so I want to say it was a good amount of time between books, because there were 9 books that came out in between book 7 and this, and 2 of them were extremely long books, because I read Under the Dome and 11/22/63 before reading this, and both of those were easily over 1,000 pages. So I want to say it was 8 years. Yeah, it was about 8 years in between these two books.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, that's a huge chunk of time between them.
Yeah.
To, like, circle back and go back to a series that you thought was done. So, like, who knows? Maybe we could get more from King that kind of relates to this series. I actually ended up really liking this book, though.
Same.
Even though, like you said, like, I wasn't sure going into it how much I was gonna, like, care about it, because it is just such, like, a side note kind of thing. But I ended up really liking it, and I don't know what about this in particular I liked. I mean, maybe it was the pacing of the story. I felt like it kept moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed interested, because there was never a point where I felt like, okay, we've been kind of talking about the same thing for a whole chapter now.
I think it helps, too, that there are multiple stories being told within this time frame, because you have the Skin Man story, which is where his friend Jamie comes in, and, you know, the Skin Man is a shapeshifter terrorizing the town, and you get those horror elements in that story, I think, a little more than you do in The Wind Through the Keyhole, which, you know, it's funny that The Wind Through the Keyhole doesn't come until, like, you're more than halfway through the book, I think. And, you know, that's the title of the book. So it kind of takes your expectations and does something different with it, because I was just expecting this sort of one long story. And instead, we get multiple stories, and he's really good at bookending these things with the quartet.
Yeah. I will say, though, that by the time he got through The Wind Through the Keyhole and got back to the Skin Man story, I had almost kind of forgotten that that's how it started.
Yeah, because you get so engrossed in The Wind Through the Keyhole story and you're invested in what happens to Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, I was so concerned about this little boy that by the time Wind Through the Keyhole ended, I had to remind myself of what was going on in the Skin Man story.
Yeah, because it's like, as Roland is finishing up The Wind Through the Keyhole story, because, you know, I think this story is taking place during the same time frame as the Skin Man story, because then you have Jamie arriving back in Dabaria, which I'm not sure I am pronouncing that correctly, but it's like Jamie was kind of doing his thing and on this journey while this other story was being told. So it was like almost happening in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And sometimes a story within a story doesn't work, because this is really a story within a story within a story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, The Dark Tower is Stephen King's story.
Right. He is very good at framing stories within stories. Like, there's not a lot of writers that could pull it off to the extent that he has.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if, one, other authors have tried to do something like this, and two, if they pulled it off nearly as well, because, as you know, most of my time has been spent reading Stephen King books, so I haven't had a ton of time to read other horror or fantasy authors in particular, and, you know, fantasy doesn't excite me quite as much as the horror genre does, but usually if I want to read something else in between Stephen King books, it's not going to be either of those genres, because I kind of like to clear my head. So sometimes I'll read like a nonfiction book, or, you know, I think I read one of the James Bond books in between, you know. It's just something where it's like, I'm going to give my brain a break and sort of go on this different little path here. But I do think he is really good at that. I would agree with you.
Yeah, and I can understand wanting to kind of clear your head in between these books, because it is a lot, and they are, most of them are so long.
Yep.
That you've spent so much time in these like fantasy or horror genres. It's like, I need a little bit of a break from this.
Yeah, and I feel like too, because of the books being so long, I really get details blurred if I go through them too quickly. Like, I read 112263, I read this, I read Joyland, all back to back to back, pretty much, I think. And so now I'm kind of like, okay, do I read something else before I start Dr. Sleep? I already took it off the shelf. And, you know, I'm thinking what might help too is just reading like comic books in between, because those are, one, much faster to read than an entire book. And, you know, we're going a little off track here, but I think now that I'm done with the Dark Tower series as a whole, after having read this book, it kind of feels like this weight is lifted, because I'm like, okay, I know this is done. Sure, there could still be a short story or something in The Bazaar of Bad Dreams that ties into it. Other books could tie into it. But I know for the most part, I have like the Mr. Mercedes trilogy coming up, which is like more detective driven. I have Dr. Sleep, which is a sequel to The Shining. So I'm kind of in this mode here where I'm like, okay, I'm going to start getting stuff that's a little different, you know, because he has finished the Dark Tower series.
Yeah, a little different and not quite as long, because I don't think there's any other bodies of work within his body of work that are like drawn out across 8 books.
No, I think next in line would be the Mr. Mercedes trilogy. And I think even as a whole, those books are a little shorter too. I'm not 100% certain on that. I know like my copy of Dr. Sleep is 530 pages, give or take, which is long, but not 700 pages long, you know?
Right.
Which is why it was refreshing too, that this was so much shorter.
Yeah. I also just completely forgot that The Stand is kind of a precursor to the Dark Tower series.
Yes, it sure is, Becky. You have more homework.
I can just remember it taking me like a month to get through The Stand because that one like is longer than I think even the longest of the Dark Tower series books.
Yeah, if you got the unedited version, uncut, whatever they call it now, I think it's over 1,000 pages.
Yeah, mine is definitely over 1,000.
I read the edited version. So I think it came in at like 800, maybe.
Still very long.
Yeah.
So really, this series, you have spent thousands of pages reading.
Yeah.
I guess now 9 books, if you're including The Stand when you talk about the Dark Tower series.
Right. And that's not even including things like Insomnia, Hearts in Atlantis, Rose Matter, you know, all of these ones that have elements to them that tie in. And, you know, I think The Wind Through the Keyhole almost just feels like a tie-in book because of how little we see of the Quartet. And I know Wizard and Glass is the same way, but Roland isn't really present in any of these stories he's telling in this book, whereas in the other stories he's telling, he's kind of still the main character.
Right. With Wizard and Glass, we learn more about like the woman that he fell in love with. And what he was like as a young man. Whereas with Wind Through the Keyhole, the bulk of the book is spent on the Wind Through the Keyhole and Tim's story. And less to do with Roland.
Yeah. So now that you've read the majority of The Dark Tower, and obviously King has put in some horror elements to these stories, especially in this, you know, you have Tim almost dying in the woods because he's being attacked by the dragon and other swamp creatures and things like that. And I'm curious, has reading The Dark Tower opened you up to maybe reading some other King books? I know you and I have talked about this where I've mentioned like, hey, not everything else is horror, like the Mr. Mercedes stuff I just mentioned, that's more like detective stories and things like that. But has this changed your viewpoint on who King is as a writer?
Yeah, because I think prior to reading these books, I mostly just thought of him as the guy who wrote, like, It or The Shining.
Uh-huh.
And for me, we've talked about this, I don't really do horror that much.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I was concerned, that's most of what he did was horror, and I didn't really want to read it. But now I do see that there's more to him than that, and I also do really love the way so many different things he's written tie in together in some way.
Yeah, it really is a lot. Even I miss connections all the time that other people who guest on the podcast will point out to me because, you know, the downside is that I'm reading through these so quickly that sometimes I'm not like 100% focused on what is happening in the books, you know. Every once in a while I'll read like 4 or 5 pages and be like, how did we get here? And then I go back.
Yeah, it's a lot though. And you are reading all of them. So, I mean, even with this series, sometimes I find it hard to keep straight what happened in which book.
Yeah.
And I have to go back and kind of refresh my memory because there is just so much content within them. But yeah, I would absolutely be open to reading more of his stuff now, maybe kind of veering away a little bit from horror like we've talked about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do love detective novels and I'm a big fan of fantasy and stuff like that. So
yeah,
things that are more in that vein would probably be more up my alley.
I would say first up for you should probably be The Eyes of the Dragon then, because that's like definitely more medieval time period and it directly ties into all of this.
Okay.
Well, not like super directly because it's a totally different time period, but it's definitely like the medieval fantasy kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds like something I would like.
Yeah, and, you know, to bring it back to The Wind Through the Keyhole here, because I know we haven't really gone super deep on the story, but I don't think it's really something that you need to go super deep on, just because it's Roland telling stories, you know? It's not like I said where the other stories he was telling, he was one of the prominent characters in them. Instead, this is kind of just to pass the time, really, and not bash us over the head with backstory, which, not to say that the other stuff bashed us over the head with it, but it's not like King was trying to fill in a bunch of blanks with this book.
Right. The backstory was a lot more straightforward on the other instances where he's done stuff like this. But I will say one of the things that I enjoyed about this book, or I don't know if enjoyed is the right word, but I appreciated the fact that it does kind of give you a little more insight into Roland's relationship with his mother and with what happened to her.
Yeah, and we get a lot of that more towards like the beginning and the end with the Skin Man story.
Yes. And he kind of tells us about this note that he was given after they defeat the Skin Man that his mother had written and left for him, saying that she forgives him, which I don't think we knew until this point that she knew that it was going to happen, that he was going to end up killing her.
Right. And we obviously have to mention the fact, too, that these stories were being told because they were taking shelter. And when the stories are over, they see that every building has been destroyed except for the one they were in because of a Stark blast.
Which sounds like such a terrifying weather event. Like, the way they described it is so scary.
In Marvel comics, it would be something they blame Tony Stark for.
Not in this, though. Not his fault. Yeah, they talk about how it gets so cold that, like, the trees kind of freeze and implode. And anything that kind of gets caught in its path just instantly freezes to death. So the fact that they found the one building where they could kind of hunker down and wait it out is really kind of a miracle.
Yeah, I think this was pretty well done for a, hey, let's put something that comes in the middle of two books and have it come out after you think it's done. I can imagine that fans of the Dark Tower series were really excited when this came out because, you know, they had spent years and years waiting for the series to finish up. And then you're kind of getting this little extra. And like you said, it really dives into the relationship with Roland's mother and how Martin knew that Roland was going to kill her. And it's kind of bizarre when you read that. You're like, oh, so this was kind of all just fate, almost.
Yeah. Because she, like we said, she knew that Roland was going to kill her. She chose to go home and face her death anyway. The ladies at the retreat that she was staying at told her that she should stay, that she shouldn't go back. And yeah, she chose to go back anyway.
It was kind of her penance, I guess.
Yeah. And from there, it did kind of set off just a whole series of events that led Roland to where he is now as he sits telling the story.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Becky, I know we've kept this fairly short here. Is there anything you want to touch on? I do really think for fans of the Dark Tower series, if you somehow missed this release or if you didn't know that it falls between books 4 and 5, you know, I think having that context helps too, because if this had just come out and he kind of didn't frame it properly, you would have been like, okay, what was the point of this?
Yeah, I don't think he could have just released it as an extra novel on its own. As it had to be a part of the series in some way. It couldn't just be a standalone, like, hey, I brought these characters back, we're gonna revisit them for a little bit. It had to fall somewhere within the series, even if it was just like a little, like, 4.5.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I ended up giving this a 4 out of 5, I want to say. I'm going to double check that, though. But what's your rating for this?
I think I gave it a 5 on my Goodreads account. I really enjoyed it. It was probably one of the ones I've gotten through quickest. And I think part of that might be the fact that there was no real pressure to get through it in order to understand the series as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did give it a 4 out of 5, so I was correct there.
Still a great rating.
Yeah, because I enjoyed the Dark Tower series much more than I thought I would, because you and I have talked about this numerous times before, how fantasy isn't always a genre that works for me. I have found some authors that I've enjoyed, like Neil Gaiman and what he does with American Gods, The Anansi Boys, and, you know, I have Good Omens and Coraline on my shelf ready to read. So I definitely have certain authors that I like. And, you know, we've talked Harry Potter books before and stuff too. And, you know, I think I'm very picky about the genre, and I don't really just want like your big drawn out fantasy series that I think a lot of authors do. Or like, does R.A. Salvatore count as like fantasy?
I am not entirely sure who that is, so I can't answer that for you.
I just know that with a lot of fantasy authors, it's like everything has to be a series. And obviously that's what King did here. But because of how it ties into the rest of his universe, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, Becky, thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoy book 7. I know it might take you a little bit to get through it, but I'm glad you were able to join me for this one.
Me too. And I will keep you updated on my progress with book 7. I think I'm going to take a little break from Stephen King and read something else in the meantime. But I do. I want to try and get to that sooner rather than later.
Sounds like a plan. All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.